And joining us now, it's always a pleasure to welcome Mark Hamrick, Senior Financial Analyst with Bankrate.com. Bankrate.com is the website. Mark, good afternoon.
Good to be with you, Sinclair. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, another strong jobs report. This is 100 in a row, 100 consecutive jobs reports that show positive job growth in the economy. We've had a real good run, and it doesn't look like it's over yet.
No, in fact, it was robust, and you would have thought that at this stage of the economic recovery, as you indicated, getting mature, that we would have seen more slowing by now. But at least in terms of what we're seeing in the payrolls numbers, quite respectable.
Quite respectable. I think probably even better than that. Whenever you're looking at 300,000 plus, even if you look at the revisions down 70,000 from the prior 2 months, it's still a pretty strong number. And I'm almost wondering, where did all this come from? Didn't we have a government shutdown last month?
Well, and that did show itself up in some aspects of the reading. So to your earlier point, we've averaged, I think, 254,000 jobs over the previous 3 months, so that's good. And I think that 2018 ends up being the strongest year in about 4 years in terms of total number of jobs being added. Now, we know some of that was probably by virtue or benefit of the tax cut, and that doesn't last forever. To your latter point about where did all this come from, well, we don't really know, but what we do know is that earlier assumptions about what full employment might be or the remaining slack in the workforce were just way off base, right? Because earlier it was thought that, well, you know, you probably get to 4.5% in the unemployment rate, and that's about it. But, you know, we've been below or at 4% since February last year now.
Indeed, and we saw the unemployment rate tick up to 4%. Even in a month when we add 304,000 jobs, are we really starting to pull those final people off of the sidelines now?
Well, we don't know if they're final, right? And there probably are going to be some people that stay on the sidelines forever, whether it's because of disability, their lack of, frankly, appropriate skills for the job market, and of course those that are in school and unemployed or just staying out of the job market for other reasons, as well as, of course, those that have retired. But to your point, for those that don't follow this so closely, there's a measure that we get within this report on a monthly basis, labor force participation, and that rose and is also up 0.5% over the past year. And so that measures the people that are working or looking for work, and so that is drawing people back into the workforce.
How many more good jobs reports along this lines do you think that we can see until we start to see some actual wage inflation?
Well, you know, there's rising wages and there's broad-based inflation, and we've had some of the former, but not so much of the latter, meaning the benefit that we have been seeing workers gather, which also included, by the way, in January, about 20 locations across the country raising their federal, or rather their local minimum wages. And so that obviously helps people at the lower part of the spectrum. I think the reality is that nobody really knows the answer to the question, or else the Federal Reserve would have a much clearer path with respect to what to do with interest rates, and even it is, let's say, working through that process right now. But to the point that I made earlier about the lack of tightness in the job market that we previously would have thought by now, we would have also thought by now, for all kinds of reasons, that we would have seen more inflation, whether it was because of the moves the Federal Reserve had made to accumulate $4 trillion worth of assets and government debt and deficits in general. And the reality is that the composition of the universe that we thought we'd be seeing by now just simply hasn't materialized.
The estimates for the past month were running in the neighborhood, I think, of 175, maybe 180,000 or so.
Right.
How did we get surprised so much by this report? Why is this report so strong?
Well, first of all, let's remember that the margin of error on this payrolls number is plus or minus 100,000. So when,
right.
when you're seeing readings that are around 200,000 jobs being added a month, I like to remind people that the extent of the gain is almost equal to the margin of error. And so that's why we have revisions, and in this case, in the December revision, quite a remarkable one. We don't often see a revision that large. And that's why we also have these seasonal adjustments or benchmark adjustments that occur once a year that also helps to whip some of these numbers around in the January reading, meaning the efforts to make the statistics closer to perfect basically occur every January jobs report. And so, trying to capture what's actually happening in the workforce and in the economy in the context of a population of about 350 million people is not easy. And so we have to acknowledge that these reports, while having very much heavily invested, well-meaning civilian employees working on them and being diligent and consulting with private economists on an ongoing basis about how to improve them, they aren't going to be perfect, and especially they're not going to be perfect on the first read, meaning, they're obviously subject to further revision in the coming couple of months as well.
Do we know, was the Labor Department furloughed? Were the people who normally work on this report, were they out for a while?
No, the Labor Department was unaffected, so that's why, for example, we continued to get the weekly unemployment claims numbers, and even for little known inside the Washington aspect of how this report is created, they rely on contract workers who are employed by the Census Bureau or the Commerce Department, and then those contracts remained in force, meaning they continued to do their work. There was no interruption in the gathering of statistics for this report. The interruption was what happened with everybody in the workforce who was directly affected by the partial government shutdown. And I might add, that did show itself up, for example, in the number of people working part-time that wanted full-time work. That number during the month rose by 500,000 in the private sector. And that rose to 5.1 million. So that just shows you the private sector is very much dependent on the government's funding as well.
Average wages, 3 cents, rose 3 cents.
Yeah.
Not a big move, but we're finally starting to see a little bit of movement. It looks like we're edging a little bit higher. I think we're up at around 3.2% over the past 12 months.
Yes, that's basically unchanged on the year-over-year basis on the month, and there was a bit of a slowdown then in what happened in the latest month, and there possibly is some impact statistically from the government shutdown there as opposed to what might have actually been happening in the real economy or some combination thereof. But, as you and I have talked about this report now for years, Sinclair, we know that the earlier part of this expansion, nearly 10 years old, that essentially wage growth was anemic or non-existent in the earlier portion. And as we've talked about this over many months now, we've had the sort of movement up in the average hourly earnings where it would have been 2.5% year over year. And now I think we've been at 3% plus for six straight months. So there is some movement there. And we also, again, need to acknowledge that part of that probably was because of the minimum wages going up in the first month of the year.
And you just kind of wonder if employers are indeed starting to pay more for a qualified worker.
I think they are in some cases, but, employers don't generally do that because they're quote-unquote nice people. They do it because it's what they have to do, or they realize, that's what the market is demanding. And they may well be nice people, too. Mine are. But the other part is that, we see that, for example, in the Beige Book report that is released a couple of weeks before every Federal Reserve meeting, where the Fed basically is in touch with its contacts throughout private industry. And we'll see readings there, whether it was more recently construction workers, and we saw construction, by the way, do pretty well in this report. We know the trucking industry has been having to pay more, and people with some of the white-collar jobs that are related to engineering. And
Hang on just a second, Mark. I wanted to get into some of those different sectors and,
sure,
and what kind of growth we saw in those different sectors, and maybe even a little bit of why. We'll do that as we continue our conversation with Mark Hamrick, Senior Financial Analyst with Bankrate.com. Bankrate.com. Back in a moment. Thanks so much for joining us today, talking with Mark Hamrick, Senior Financial Analyst with Bankrate.com. Bankrate.com and Bankrate Washington Bureau is where you work from, Mark. That means that you're dealing with a lot of issues like the jobs report that we're covering today, but also the Federal Reserve, which had a meeting earlier in the week, and I want to get to that. But first, let's look at where the jobs were in the past month. Where did it really come from? One area I know, leisure and hospitality, that would be restaurants, casinos, places like that. Also, construction added some new workers.
Yeah, those are at the top of the list that I would have mentioned. Construction adding 52,000, leisure, hospitality 74,000 after, I think it was 55,000 the month before. And some people believe that that possibly is a weather-related impact on both of those, because even though it's hard for us in the Northeast or Mid-Atlantic and Midwest to remember this now because of what we've been going through recently, but the early part of January when these surveys were taken actually was seasonably mild or unseasonably mild, and so that could possibly make a change there. But, you know, for many months now, we've seen, for example, what I think is an underappreciated aspect, the so-called goods-producing realm, a very solid contributor to this report. So more than 50,000 jobs added in construction, 13,000 added in manufacturing. And by the way, subsequent to the release of the jobs report, we did hear from the Institute for Supply Management, which did indicate that the manufacturing sector is continuing to do pretty well there. And that's even with a strong dollar, we might add.
Yeah, manufacturing turned in another very solid report, up from the prior month and showing growth in the overall sector. So some good news there. Now let's talk about the Federal Reserve and what this means for the Fed, which, of course, had a policy meeting, an FOMC meeting, that wrapped up earlier this week. As expected, they took no action in that meeting to raise or lower rates. But I think that they actually kind of painted a picture for us of what we might expect in the future.
Yes, and as you know, Sinclair, I typically do attend the chair's news conference, going back to Ben Bernanke and, of course, with Chairman Powell now. And this was one of the more fascinating ones to me, because we know that what has occurred since October is what I call a Powell pivot. And that is, in early October, Chairman Powell indicated that essentially he thought that the interest rates that the Fed governs were needing to go substantially higher still. Yet financial markets didn't react very well in the following few months. A lot going on there, but essentially Powell and his colleagues have now signaled that they're going to be quote-unquote patient. And when reporters tried to drill down further on that at this most recent news conference, he was even unwilling to say that the next move could well be a rate increase, meaning, obviously, it might well be a rate reduction. I think if I were going to bet on one versus the other, I might still go with the rate hike these days. But, yeah, the Fed wants to really wait to see how any number of different developments unfold. And as he enumerated them, that includes global trade, U.S.-China, and Brexit. Obviously, the impacts of the partial government shutdown, although we don't believe those to be, really dramatic with respect to the broader economy. And obviously the fact that the Fed has been raising interest rates for several years now, so I think they also want to see how all that just sort of settles out as it affects the markets and the economy.
You brought up a couple of interesting points there. U.S.-China trade, Brexit, and what's going on between the U.K. and the European Union. Also, the shutdown. All these issues have yet to really be resolved. Let's run through a few of them. First of all, the shutdown. We're well aware that the government shutdown has ended, but it could come roaring back in just over 2 weeks from now if we can't find some sort of a deal. What are you hearing about any sort of a deal for the budget?
If I had to bet, let's say a friend's money, Sinclair, what I think is going to happen is the conferees are going to do their own thing, and that's members of both parties to basically fund the government, and then the president is going to throw his hands up, act exasperated, and go ahead and declare his emergency to basically reallocate existing federal funds to do what he wants to do with the so-called border wall. I think that, you know, when you have Nancy Pelosi basically saying, no, 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 that's the answer that it's going to be. And the punchline that they basically have come up with in the past few weeks, if it looks like the president has been losing weight, it's because Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, has been eating his lunch. I think that he thought he had a stronger hand to play with that, and clearly in the end he had to fold his cards. So I think that the government probably won't be shut down again because of all the reasons that we know it was detrimental to do it in the first place. The president knows that he can't push the House any further than he has tried to already. And frankly, the Senate, Mitch McConnell, I think they're done with this as well. They don't want to suffer through this again.
Hmm. Next on the agenda is U.S.-China trade. And again, we face a deadline where we might see existing tariffs of 10% pop up to 25%.
I mean, it feels like the U.S. and China are playing nice on this. Obviously, we had a delegation here in Washington this week, including a televised, another remarkable situation where the president is in the Oval Office with his Chinese would-be counterpart and basically indicating that all is going well. I think the problem for all the rest of us on this situation, Sinclair, is it's very hard to get a real-time reading from the administration as to where things are. And you have Larry Kudlow come out and say it'll be fine or it's great, and then you have others come out and say, oh, no, it's a lot more difficult. And frankly, I wouldn't want to have to bet on the outcome of this, but we know that if indeed those tariffs do have to go higher, it's not going to be good for anybody because while the war is being fought, a trade war is not good for either side.
No, I don't think a trade war is good. In fact, that's one of the things that has riled Wall Street from time to time over the past few months. But at the same time, I got to say, the past 6 weeks on Wall Street, going back into the early January and back right around Christmas time, we've had a tremendous rally.
Yeah, I mean, the Christmas Eve was the low, and I think recaptured maybe two-thirds of the previous decline in the ensuing advance. So I think what's happening is that, number one, the Fed being taken out of play, that's relieved a lot of people. And I think that many investors are just betting that both the U.S. and China are going to make an agreement of some kind out of necessity. So fingers crossed.
So we climb a wall of worry. One more thing to throw in there, and that's Brexit. Again, a deadline. And right now it doesn't look like they're ready to meet any of the conditions for a soft Brexit, if you will.
No, I mean, it obviously seems as if there's plenty of incentive for both the EU and Britain to come to some sort of understanding. This is sort of, once again, no man's or no person's land with respect to how do we don't really have a playbook to go by on this, but much the same as the U.S.-China situation, it's obviously in the best interest of those parties to try to forge an agreement. But at a time of such heightened political polarity, it's difficult to predict because globalization and income inequality has really kind of poured gasoline on a fire, and we don't know how it ends.
Well, we know that this past month we had some good jobs numbers, 304,000 new jobs added to the economy, even though the unemployment rate moved a little bit higher, up to 4%, an indication that more people were actually entering the labor force and becoming involved in this labor market. That's a sign of a fairly positive and strong jobs market right now. We'll see how it goes moving forward. And, of course, all this affects rates of various sorts, mortgage rates, auto loan rates, credit card rates, lending rates of all sorts. And if you'd like to find out more about all of these rates and how the news is affecting the rates, go to bankrate.com. That's bankrate.com. And joining us today, senior financial analyst with Bankrate, Mark Hamrick. Mark, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, sir.
Always, Mike. Great pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me, Sinclair.